And now our featured speaker, Patrick G. from Lompoc. Patrick Guthrie, alcoholic. Yeah, that was quite a talk you gave there, Gary. It's Lompoc, all right? Just saying. You know, he left out a couple things about his story. It wasn't his wife's shoes he was wearing, you know. It was her underwear. And then at the hotel, it was the two big guys that he woke up between that kind of scared him. That's why he's here, okay? I don't want to share your fist step, bro, but it's cool. I want to welcome all the newcomers. I'm assuming that there's a recovery house someplace. Is that, what's the name of it?
The Haven.
The Haven. That sounds like a fancy place, man. It's really the Hellion, man. It is. I know. And then congratulations, all the birthday people. Yeah, it's really an amazing thing. So I am from Lompoc, and at least I'm in a place that everyone knows where that's at. Because a lot of times when I speak, they like, Lompoc, where's that? And I tell them that it's between Santa Barbara and Pismo Beach. And they're like, wow, that must be really nice. And it's kind of like Bakersfield West. Except I know we have someone from Bakersfield here. So when I'm at Bakersfield speaking, I say it's like Oildale. And they go, oh, yeah, Oildale. Yeah, man. Like to clear, get catch everybody on this one, you know. Oh, yeah. Mom? No, I'm not high. I just need 40 bucks. Come on. All right, 20. The rogue cell phone ringing, man. I love that. That's awesome. We did have dinner. We were invited to dinner at the Jaffa Cafe beforehand. Christy said, hey, man, go there. Everyone goes to the Jaffa Cafe and you can eat. And so we got there, and my buddy Eddie and I, thanks for rolling with me, Eddie. And we saw people setting up a bunch of tables there. And so I made a comment like, you guys are going to take all the tables. And they kind of looked at me like, you jerk. Which is probably true. And I are you the South County group? And nobody said anything. I'm like, oh, crap, you know, I am a jerk now. You know, I didn't say anything until at the end, because we ate by ourselves. At the end, I said, are you guys friends of Bill? And they're like, yeah. Oh, okay. Oh, are you going to the meeting? I'm like, oh, yeah, well, I was invited, but thanks for letting me eat with you. But I will say this, the guy did grab the bill, man. It was cool. And I promised Eddie I wouldn't make fun of him, but here I am, you know? They've already called me fat. They said I was from Lompoc. I mean, what in the hell kind of meeting is this? Really, man? Big like Lompoc, you know? Is this even AA anymore, man? We'll be asking that question a lot for the next 40 minutes. So I had a May birthday, May the 18th, 1986. I celebrated 32 years, and very happy. Yeah. Did it all myself, didn't need AA, didn't need God, did it all myself, man. You hang in there back there from Haven. Dude, you don't need anybody, man. Just do it by yourself. You know, yeah. You know, I tell you, I got sober when I was 23. I was really young, and I couldn't believe the party was over, you know. But it had been over for a while, and I don't even know how I did it, you know. I really don't. I just was like, I didn't have a desire to get 32 years. I just wanted to get some of the heat off my back, and there was a lot of it. But you know, the first meeting I went to, it was in a church basement, And I was pretty beat up, and I hadn't done any recovery houses. I got picked up on a traditional 12-step call, and they brought me into the meeting, and everybody is laughing. There's a smell of coffee. It was 1986, so it was when the meetings were good, when you could smoke in them, and there was like a cloud of cigarette smoke in there. So everybody's like, oh, drinking coffee, you know? And I loved you. Yeah, I loved you guys right away. I did. And everybody started sharing horrible things. One guy had a failed suicide, and everybody was laughing about it, and I was like, oh my God, you know? One lady had a birthday for 18 years, and I tell you what, she looked like she was in her 70s. She should have stopped drinking a lot earlier than that. And but you know, I'm a little intimidated up here, but I'm glad that the roof didn't cave in. Maybe I should say mass up here instead. I went to Catholic school. And my dad was in the Air Force, so we traveled around a lot, but the longest place that we were stationed at was at Vandenberg, and it wasn't until I was 40 that I found my way back there again. I lived there until I was 11, and I went to La Prisma school, and we went to Mass every day, and yeah, it was good. And, you know, it was... It was a hard time. You know, the problem was, is my father was molesting my sister and I. And it had started, well, to be honest, I don't know when it started. I think I was probably, my earliest memories was 3 or 4 years old. And my sister was a couple years older than me. And it was at night. And I'll tell you this, it didn't make me alcoholic. It just, I'm an alcoholic who was molested by his father. What makes me alcoholic is that when I drank, I don't know what's going to happen. And I think about, not even like thinking about, I think about it before I even take the drink. It's always on my mind. I just, I want to get, where can we get some weed? Where are we, beer, you know, whatever. I've got it on my mind a lot. And that's kind of what makes me alcoholic, is I just want to escape whatever it is I'm feeling. And I don't even understand it either. I know that they talk about the allergy and the obsession, and all I know is that when I drink, bad things happen. But there are some good things that happen, too. I black out. I don't remember anything. Those are kind of good things, especially when you want to kill yourself. And so, I don't know. I always think that alcohol saved me. I know it sounds crazy, but I do. So this thing was going on with my dad, and we were going to church every day, and it just didn't really mesh up. And you know, I got to tell you, I kept that knowledge of child abuse secret for a long time. I didn't tell anybody. It was like one of those things you take to your grave. And because it's embarrassing, it's shameful, it's, and I didn't want anybody to feel sorry for me, and, you know, that thing, you know, and, but what happened was I just was angry. I really hated him. And then it seemed like I hated every male authority figure in my life. And then it just morphed into, I just hate you all. You know what I mean? Because you're all going to get over on me. I know it. And I have these relationships where I would just set it up so I was the victim. And then, see? They're all doing it to me. You know what I mean? It's like, forgive them, Father. They know not what they do. I'm a good Bible guy, you know? So I can quote it all. Did somebody already drink out of this? Because it's been cracked. Gary, did you, long boat. Jamin. Gary, you're not off the hook yet, bro. I'm just getting started with you. Calling me fat. Jamin. You know, I used to run. I did. I ran a 418 mile in high school. I know it's hard to believe, but, come on. And that was like one of the things that kept me from just going off the deep end was running. It was a very, very addictive. And I ran 20 miles a day. I went to college on a cross-country track scholarship, and totally screwed that off, you know. And really, like, people used to always tell me, "You've got such potential." You know, ever tell you that? What I heard was, "You are such a loser." You know, having potential means that, I don't know. I hear it like it's all you're making all the wrong choices. And and can't you get sober for her? You're killing your mom. You know, all those frothy emotional appeals, they just don't work for me. They don't. In fact, I kind of double down. You know, and just like, oh yeah. Yeah, it's her fault. And I did. I blame my mom on a lot of things. I blame my dad for everything, too. I could not take responsibility for anything that happened to me. Anything that I was... And I got to tell you, I had a righteous resentment. You know, what is a four-year-old kid going to do? I mean, really, it's like, that's a righteous resentment. I'll tell you, those are the ones that will kill you in Alcoholics Anonymous. It almost killed me. And then there's those border ones that we think are righteous, but they're BS. They are. And you know what they are, because you guys all have them. And I've got them too. So this abuse thing continued until I was 17 and I left the house. And it ended like in a fist fight. We got into a fist fight and the neighbors were outside. It was kind of like a mini UFC without the round room, you know. And we were punching and kicking and cussing, and the police came, and I left, and I never, you know, I didn't go back. I went straight out. That was my senior year in high school, and I went off to college, and just kind of did it on my own. And I just couldn't really count on them for anything. And woe is me, you know, that whole thing. And I got to college, and I was a runner, and I hung with the track team, and then, you know, they said, "Let's go drink," and I'm like, "Oh yeah," because I got nothing stopping me now. Now I'm about 140, and in college, I know, Gary, I'm 250 now. Okay, so just let up on the brother. Okay, he can't help it. He still thinks he's running 20 miles a day, so he's eating like that. All right, and I will talk about myself in the third person. Don't sweat me for that either. But started drinking, and I could get more or less insanely drunk on two beers. But then it just kind of, I started drinking Captain Morgan Spice Rum, and I love that stuff. Like, arr, you know, and you guys. And the anger and all of it just started to well up, and we went to a show. I was going to school in Kansas City, Missouri, and there was a show there, not a concert, because the concerts are lame and shows are cool, and it was the Dead Kennedys, and Joe LaBriafra was playing there, and he came out. We got there early, and he came out in this long trench coat with these wraparound mirrored glasses, and he was high-stepping. "Do as you're told, spawn and reproduce." You know what I mean? It was like, who is this guy? It was so cool. And and I knew right then I wanted to, you know, join a punk rock band. And so we started one. You probably heard of us. Anorexic Sacrifice. Not really was the name of them, but we sucked, you know. It's punk rock music, so, you know, it's cool. You know, if you suck, it's like, yeah, you guys suck. And but we played this show in Austin, Texas, and, you know, I got to tell you, by this time, I was really into the disease of it. I wouldn't hang out with anybody that wouldn't co-sign. I wouldn't hang out with anybody that wasn't in the whole alcohol drug realm. And, you know, my grandmother had cancer, and she had cancer for 14 years. It was like every 2 years she's about to die. We've got to go say goodbye to her. And we'd go there, and then she'd pull out of it. It was like a miracle, you know. But what it did for me was I think I was probably 14 or 15. I went into to use the bathroom at grandma's house, and I opened up the medicine cabinet, you know, and it was like there was light coming out from behind it. Oh, you know, like the gold. And I was like, wow, they're just bottles of stuff, you know. And I didn't, you know, I just took a couple and waited, like, what's going to happen? You know, sometimes I'd be like, you just fall asleep. That's no fun. Sometimes you're like, and that's no fun either. The ones I like were the ones like, oh, yeah. Oh. Can you scratch my back? It really itches. It's bleeding. Oh, no, get in there and dig it hard. You know, and you know what I'm talking about. And, I mean, one time I took these and I pissed blood for a week. They were blood thinners. You don't even get high on them. If I piss blood, I want a buzz, all right, damn it? Come on, man. And I got a little smarter as I went along. This one said, don't mix with alcohol. Ooh, that's a keeper, you know? Don't use while operating heavy machinery. Oh, yeah. Where's the dump truck? You know, and finally I started slamming these Dilaudids. They're like a Schedule 4 narcotic to give to cancer patients, you know. And I know that this is an AA meeting, and I'm sorry. I wish that somebody would have told me when I was in my grandmother's bathroom, dude, you're not going to be able to share as a pure alcoholic at the AA meeting in Atascadero if you do that, because I would have done it anyway. And so we're playing this gig in Austin, Texas, and I was living in Springfield, Missouri at the time, and we were the first of 30 bands, and we had been driving for 2 days. You know, Texas is like its own country, man. Is there anybody from Texas here? Yeah, okay, you understand what I'm talking about, man. But I do like it. They got the double-wide parking spaces for big guys from Lompoc, and thanks for that, Gary. Really feel good about myself. And I do have a full head of hair. And just saying. And so we're the first of 30 bands. We get in. We finally pull into Austin. I realized we hadn't eaten in like 2 days. And I thought, you know what? Hey, let's go and get something to eat. And they're like, here's the Burger King. I'm like, fine, whatever. And we go in there. I eat a Whopper in like 3 bites. I run into the bathroom. I bang a number 4. And I finish off the Captain Morgan spice rum that I had. Arrgh! You know, and we get to the show. We're a little late, all right? But the guy comes out. There's like 200 punk rockers sitting outside this venue. It was the Austin VFW, Veterans of Foreign War. And they don't appreciate the punk rock movement there at all. They pretty much don't appreciate anybody but us. They hated. But we got there, and the guy says, you're not gonna have time to warm up, you got to get going. I'm like, oh we're red hot, man. And we go up there, and we're all set up, and nobody's gonna listen to us. They're like, everyone's out at the back punk rocking, but not with us, except for these 5 neo-Nazi Texas skinheads that are sitting right there in front. And these guys are looking for trouble, you know. And anyway, we're playing. Family man, with your life so planned, I'd like to crucify you to your front door with nails from your well-stocked garage. Wow! Right? And this guy in the front row is like, and it's like the biggest skinhead, right? And he's like, he's pulling one up from his, you know, and he's like, and he lets it fly. And I can see it coming at me. No, it's like slow motion or something. It's like, and it like, whack, hits me right in the face. And oh my God, it was like the smell. I don't know what this guy ate, but it was nasty. And all of a sudden it was like, arr, you know? And the Whopper was like, argh. But the Dilaudid said, coming up, baby. And I was like, and I just projectile vomited on these guys, man. I'm talking go Godzilla, right? And the guy that actually shot the loogie at me, took the main brunt of it. He was picking pickle out of his ear. And he pulled me off the stage and started to pummel me. And I know I'm taking damage, right? But I'm on a Schedule 4 narcotic they give to death cancer patients. So I don't feel anything, but I know it's bad. Because I can see the flashes. If you've been hit really hard in the face, you see the flashes like, oh, going out, coming back, going out, you know. And finally, oh, by the way, the band never stopped playing. Oh, what in the hell? They pull this guy off of me, the bouncers do. All the people in the back all come running up, man, because somebody just threw up and has got his butt kicked, and now we've got a punk rock show now, you know. It went down in punk rock lore, let me tell you. In fact, it was every time we ever played after that, it was like, puke, 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 puke. Oh my God, really? Even my bass player was like, dude, you think you could puke again? Because I'll tell you, that thing worked for us in Austin. Like, dude, we're anorexic sacrifice for God's sake, not bulimic banquet, man, come on. Oh my God. Good times. Why did I ever stop? You know what I mean? I think about this all the time. Like, those were some really quality times, you know? Why would you give that up? Haven people, dude, don't, no, man. Maybe you might have overshot the mark a little bit, you know? Maybe you just, you know, just cut back a little bit, yeah. If we only could, man. I had that in my mind, man. Maybe when I first came in, I thought, I might have just gone a little over the mark, you know? This hang, like, this total abstinence, really? I mean, come on. You know? Just a beer every now and then. Wine cooler, maybe a little recreational marijuana. I'm so glad I came in with a well-whooped ass, you know? And I'm talking about the well-whooped ass you get from that combination of drinking and drugs. And I know this is a AA meeting, but what it did for me was it enabled me to know that now that pot is legal, woo, and about 100 times stronger, that I can't do it. I know. And there are people in Alcoholics Anonymous that can smoke weed. I ain't one of them. And if you are, dude, I'm not making a judgment here. Well, a little bit, Gary, if you're smoking weed, dude, come on, man. No, but the thing is, it's like, it's what you can get away with. Me, I'm really fortunate that I know that I can't take any Percodan for pain or anything. I'm really like on the edge when I take a couple of cold tablets. You know, it's like, oh man, you know. So, and that's just me, and I'm grateful that AA has given me that. You know, so I'll tell you. I went to that first meeting at that church, and I just fell in love with it, and I moved to Long Beach shortly after that. I made a geographic, got me a sponsor, and started working the steps. And being a runner, you know, I always thought that the idea of the steps where you wanted to get to 12 so you could finish. You know, like you're crossing the finish line. Done, sober, yeah. Now I can stop going to these damn meetings. And it doesn't work like that. It's a bummer, though. I'm, you know, sometimes, you know. So, but, God. That's holy water now. And, but I did that four step, and of course I didn't mention anything about the child abuse of that sponsor. That's take to the grave. He said, you need to go back and make amends to your mom and dad. And I was like, well, why would I have to do that? Because you stole money from him, you said. Yeah, I did do that. And all this other stuff, you know. And so I went out there to make amends. I had about 3 years sober. And got in the living room. They were living in Milwaukee at the time. And they're both there. And I start to make the amends to talk about it. And I saw my dad. And I just started to get angry. Like, I don't owe this guy any amends. This son of a, you know, I'm just. And these words came out, man, that I can't say here because they said I'm not allowed to drop any F-bombs or cuss up here. I did say ass. I'm sorry about that. Did talk about women's underwear. Sorry about that. But that's really Gary's story, not mine. And I did talk about the two dudes that he slept with, but that's his story, not mine, all right? Dude, I don't judge. It's all good, man. It is. It's cool, man. You know? They were really happy. They had a smile on their face, and I loved the purple underwear. It was cool. Little G-string. And oh, no, but I didn't do that, all right? Here's what happened. I started cussing my mom and dad out. They cussed me out, and ended up my dad boots me out the door and tells me never to come back there again. I said, I'll never come back, and the door was slammed, and I got in my rental car, and I call that a really successful amends, you know? In NA, you know, but no, and oh man, oh, you had to go there. And and so this is what I do. I just don't talk to people. I don't. When I'm mad, I'm just shut them off, and I just shut them off for 10 years. Didn't talk to my mom or dad. Christmas, birthdays, Mother's Days, Father's Days, you know, all that. No communication. My mom had sent a couple letters. Shh, didn't even read them. All right, I might have read a part of one and started to feel a little and had to kill it right away. In fact, at Christmas time, I would feel like, you know, all the Christmas movies and every family and all that. Like Christmas, they're just cutting down these perfectly good trees. It's all a capitalist plot. They're buying all their crap. You know what I mean? It's like, it's a, the whole, you know, thing. And because I just was so angry. And it wasn't until about, I had about 13 years sober and I'd had enough. I couldn't take it anymore. And I got a new sponsor. And he started taking me through the steps again. And he told me that I was going to have to forgive my dad. And I said, well, what has he got to do with it? And he said, we can't go any further until you forgive your dad. I go, why? He goes, oh, I think you know why. And those old timers, man, they're good. They are. They know stuff, man. And this guy really did. He said, how about this? Would you be willing to forgive your dad? And I thought, oh, that sounds like no harm, no foul. Yeah, sure, man, I'll be willing. And he goes, good, because willingness without action is fantasy. So here's what you're going to do. I'm like, a what, the what, the what? And how do we go from willingness to action, man? That's what AA is, man. It's all about action. He said, we're going to have this retreat. We're going to do this forgiveness exercise, and you are going to go there, and you're going to pray to your 9-volt battery God, because that's about the juice you're pulling off that higher power, for the willingness to forgive your dad. You just insulted my God, man. Come on. It was true. It may have been a D-cell. I don't know. Maybe not the full 9 volts, but because I had prayed to that God in 4th grade. I was 10. It was rough, hard times, man. Real bad. I remember sitting in that church, hurting. Dear God, please make it stop, please. And it didn't. In fact, I think it got worse. And I said right there, man, there either is no God or is he's a mean son of a bitch and I don't want to have anything to do with him. And I vacillated, I got to tell you, between those all the time, man. Just like, he's mean, he's not real. He's mean, he's not real. I couldn't find that loving God. I just couldn't find it. I couldn't see it in the world that I lived in. Even with 13 years sober, even with that much time. I was definitely the kid whistling in the dark. Oh, yeah, everything's great, man, I'm doing well. But inside, I was dying. And this guy, Clint Hodges was his name. He's from the Pacific Group, and good guy, man, I miss him. He died in 2008, and I think about him all the time. But he told me I gotta forgive my dad, and I did. I prayed for the next 3 weeks, went to this retreat, and he pulls out, there's about 75 guys at this retreat, and only 7 or 8 of us at the forgiveness exercise, and I was one of the unlucky ones, you know. At the time, I saw it as unlucky. And Clint pulls out this book from Emmett Fox, and it's super religious. I mean, over the top, praise Jesus, rejoice, all the baptized unto the Lord, Advent, all that. Woo-hoo! You know, and it was that. And it said, it was in the back of the Sermon on the Mount. And Emmett Fox, I found out later, that was very influential to Bill Wilson in writing the big book. But in the back, he breaks down the Our Father. And inside the Our Father, there's a sentence in there that says, forgive us our trespasses as we forgive those who trespass against us. And from that, Emmett wrote like 7 pages. This guy had a lot of free time, I guess. Inside of those 7 pages, it sounds something like this. I fully and freely forgive the whole business. And Clint walked us through it. And he walked through, I fully and freely forgive my father the whole business. It's just words, you know. But I tell you, I felt something physically lift off of me. I did. I felt it. I just was like, oh my God. And then he's like, is there anybody else you want to forgive? All right, my mom. I fully and freely forgive the whole business, my mom. Wow, I'm getting free, man. Is there anybody else? Well, I told you, I had set up all my relationships. I was the victim. I just set it up that way. It wasn't true. It's how I set it up. I'm just letting everybody off the hook. I mean, all of them, they're all getting forgiven. It's just like, and you know who's getting free? Not them, me. I'm the one that's getting free. I didn't even know I was a prisoner. So by this time, it's just Clint and I, knee to knee. I'm crying. I'm having an experience. You know, one of the things that Gary did talk about that was spot on, it wasn't that I was fat. It was that he talked about the momentum. The inertia that happens when you get with a group. And this was the momentum of being sober for so long. You just can't stay around here and not get on this train. And once this train starts and the... you're flying on it and you don't even know. It's amazing. It is an amazing journey. And here I am on this train at the Mary Joseph Retreat Center in Palos Verdes, California, sitting across from Clint Hodges, having an experience. Can't get away from the Catholics. I can't, man. I wanted to speak at St. Patrick's tonight, really. I had to come over here to St. John's, you know. Sorry. He said, all right, is there anybody else or anything else you want to forgive? I thought, okay. I want to forgive God. I want to forgive that God that in the fourth grade, the one I prayed to, that I felt had abandoned me. That's the one I wanted to forgive. And I did. I fully and freely forgive the whole business. And boom. That's when it happened for me. Chuck Chamberlain talked about the sunlight of the Spirit. And I really love that as an example. Because the thing is that the sunlight is out there. It always is. I had the windows closed, the curtains on it. I had tinfoil on the windows for the tweakers in here. You know what I mean? There was no light getting in that baby because I know they're out there, right? And what happened at that moment was the curtains got ripped off, the tinfoil got tore off, and I felt the sunlight of the Spirit. And I have never been the same since then. The next morning, Clint told me I should call my mom because it was Mother's Day. I said, I will. I wanted to call her. I did. I wanted to call them both. I couldn't. Every time I picked the phone, this thing would, if he says this or if she does that, I'm hanging up. It was all the prep. It's the obsession of the mind thing. I couldn't do it. But this time, I just went over, dialed the number. My mom answered the phone. I said, it's Patrick, and I could hear her crying on the other end. She's so, are you okay? I said, I'm good, Mom. She says, we missed you so much. I missed you too, Mom. And that's how it began. I didn't get married till I was 35. Probably because I was fat and from Lompoc, but I don't know. I was living in Long Beach at the time, so that's cool. And I was skinny. And my wife is a couple years older than I am, and we had been trying to have kids, and it wasn't going to happen. It was miscarriage, you know. I just figured, you know, just waited too long, you know. And I'll tell you, the other thing that got me was that there was a lot of fear about having kids. I didn't have those proclivities, but I didn't know. I didn't know if I was going to wake up and be Chester the molester, you know what I mean? Like my dad. And And every time there was that miscarriage, I was just like, oh, thank God. My wife is devastated, and I'm over there relieved behind this. But I came back from that retreat, and my wife says, I got some news. I go, what is it? So I'm pregnant. I go, oh, that's great. And she goes, the last miscarriage she carried until 6 months. It was a mess. It was horrible. And she says, I can't go through it again. I go, this one's going to go through. And she goes, how do you know? How can you be sure? I go, because I'm not afraid anymore, and neither are you. We're gonna do this. And a year later, we moved from Long Beach to Lompoc, and Dorothy was born at the Lompoc Hospital. I was right there. It was beautiful. I was right there. We're talking in the stirrups. And, fellas, it'll kill your sex life. It will. What the hell? Get the knife. We're going to cut. I'm like, ah! I put a couple extra stitches in there for you. I'm like, dude, that's my wife. He really did say that. I'm like, come on, man. Jeez. But they handed me that bloody baby burrito, and she was just smiling, and she has not stopped smiling. And it's been the greatest gift you guys have ever given me. It is. You know, we named her after her grandmother, Dorothy, and didn't know what it meant. It means gift of God. And she's 15 now, so... you know what? She still loves me, though. You know what I mean? I know a lot of teenage girls. But I will say this. Like, how was your day? It was fine. What did you do? Nothing. Because she did the whole social media thing, you know, the phone. When I get her attention, I just shut the wireless off. And she's like, ah! We went to every father-daughter dance from 4 until she was like 13. Then she's like, Dad, I'm too old for that. I'm like... Really? You know, I'm teaching her how to drive now. God grant me the serenity. We talk a lot, you know, and she, you know, it's funny because I listen to the hardcore punk music, you know, and my parents are like, that stuff is trash. And she listens to this pretty gnarly music, man. And I mean, it's I'm trying to be cool. Yeah, I like that. But now I gotta say, I do like Kendrick Lamar, man. He's cool, man. He is. But you know, it's like Lil Pump, you know, just it's a little bit much for me, you know. And Nav, I can do Nav, you know. But so I actually took her and her friends to go see Nav in LA like 3 weeks ago. And then Lil Pump comes out, Gucci Gang, Gucci Gang, Gucci Gang, Gucci Gang. I was like, I was living again, man. I was like, don't let him throw up on you, man. And, but it was just, you know, it's been cool being a father, you know. And my wife is a principal at a school. And I try and get her to paddle, but she just won't do it. And you know, after Dorothy was born, I finally got to my 8-step. And... Clint had given me real specific directions on how to do that amends. You know, it wasn't shoot from the hip. One thing he told me was, you don't do the amends for your mom and dad together. You do them apart. And he had I had a 3x5 card for every amends that I had put down. So when I was ready to do that 9th step, I had a card to work from. Now I didn't read it. I am sorry for, you know, whatever. I had worked with him on this specific amends pretty in depth, and they were living in Peoria, Illinois at the time, and I flew out. We met at a coffee shop. We weren't there to drink coffee. We were there to do the amends, but it was a neutral place. And I sat across from my dad at the table there, and I just told him what my side of the street was. I stole from you. I embarrassed you. I totaled like 6 cars, man. I never went to DUI. I went straight to car wreck, you know? And I just... all the stuff that was on me. And he looked across from me, and he was crying pretty hard. And And then I asked him, and this is really the walk in order, the marching orders of the ninth step. Well, what can I do to make it right? Because that's really what we're there to do, to amend what had happened. Forget whatever he did or they did. It's not them, man. It is you. You're the one. It's not, I'm not a victim anymore. I'm just not. And the thing is when I do that, I give all my power away. I have no power. I am at the will of everybody that hurts me. Forgive them, Father. They know not what they do. You know, this way I'm getting my power back and I'm telling them all the stuff that I had done. And I asked him what I can do to make it right. And he said, be the best father you can be to Dorothy. And I thought, okay. And I went, same thing with my mom. And she said the same thing. And on my way out, my dad gave me a CD that he had. And figured out it's going to be some flute music or some crap like that. Because he likes that. Anyway, and I looked at it and said, Hugh Guthrie, Sexaholics Anonymous, International Convention. I'm like, what? And he was a speaker, just like I'm speaking to you now. He was a speaker at a Sexaholics Anonymous. I didn't even know he was in the program. The thing that got me about listening to it was how similar it was to alcohol. You know, the remorse, the regret, the lack of power, the destruction of lives. He was telling our story, and I couldn't hate him anymore. You know, in the fourth step, it talks about, in the big book, it talks about we see them as sick people, and that's when it finally clicked on me, that he wasn't the devil. He suffered from a disease, just like I suffer from a disease. And it was a hard pill to swallow, and I did. I just was like, the last vestiges of the amends or the resentment really just disappeared. And you know, it's funny because I get to go into, I do a lot of H&I. I have Tim Whitcomb as my sponsor. I'm supposed to mention him three times. Tim Whitcomb, Tim Whitcomb, Tim Whitcomb. And make sure and send him that, would you? Thanks, man. And so he was like, when I first got him, Clint had died, and Clint told me, you need to go and find this guy, Tim Whitcomb, to be your sponsor. I'm like, all right. And I did, and Tim was a big prison guy, you know. He's like, well, what I do is I go into the prisons. I'm like, oh, that sounds cool for you, man. And he's like, no, you want to come? I'm like, no, man. And he's like, no, you're living in Lompoc. We can go right into the federal pen. Like, it'd be like the last place I want to go. And he's like, no, it'll be fun. And I've been going to prisons with him for the last 15 years, you know, 14 years. And we go into CMC and California Men's Colony. And I've been going in there for over 10 years and gotten to know a lot of guys. And some of the guys have even gotten out. And just got to be friends with them. I want to share one experience because we're in a church and it was this thing. So I have a business. I'm a computer phone guy, you know, and I had a kid working for me and he was getting married and he wanted, we're all computer geeks. So you got to, you know, think whatever the show was times 100 and we're pretty nerdy. And but he says, hey, you know, my wife and I were thinking, it's actually Dickie's daughter. You know, it's funny that you mentioned. But said, my wife and I wanted to know if you would marry us. Like, dude, I'm not a priest, you know what I mean? Oh, but you can go to the ulc.org and get your license. You can marry us. And I'm like, that's very thoughtful. But it's like, all right, dude, I'll do it, you know? And so I went on there to the United Universal Life Church or whatever it was and filled out the form. It was like $15, man. But at the end, you know, on a lot of the web forms or you go and buy stuff, they always try to throw the extra stuff in for free. What they had on there was something about the forgiveness of sins for $3, your ability to forgive sin for $3. Oh, Oh, hell yeah, man. I checked that button all night and day. I checked out $18. I can marry you and forgive your sin. I'm sharing about this at the CMC one night, and the whole place is just going crazy. They love me in there. I don't, probably not for the same reason, but you know, they do. And they're like, yeah. And I go, you know what? I think I will. Would you like your sins forgiven? And the whole place just went crazy. I mean, and it wasn't like laughter. And they were, I did it. I fully and freely forgive all your sins. It was, and then I realized, man, they need what we all need. It's just a little mercy. That's all we need, just a little mercy. All the people from Haven. I know, man, maybe you don't feel it, but that's what you need right now, just a little mercy, man. Because if you got justice, if I got justice, I wouldn't be up here. I'd be in that prison. What I get is a little mercy. And that's what Alcoholics Anonymous has given me and continues to give me. Thanks for letting me share. The heck.